Welcome back to Insights Now. I'm David Kelly, Chief Market Strategist here at JP Morgan Asset Management. This episode marks the beginning of our ninth season of Insights Now, entitled Alternative Realities. Over the course of the next five episodes, I'll sit down with portfolio managers from across JP Morgan Asset Management to help shed some light on the rapidly growing and increasingly important world of alternatives. These conversations will range from broad overviews of the entire opportunity set to asset class specific deep dives across private equities, private credit, real estate, and more. So please stay tuned this season as we try to simplify the complex world of alternatives and uncover the most compelling opportunities for investors. Since 1950, the classic 60-40 stock bond portfolio has delivered a strong annualized return of 9.3%. However, with elevated valuations across US equities and low bond yields relative to history, returns from public markets may be less impressive moving forward. That said, for those willing to venture outside the classic 60-40, adding a sleeve of alternatives to a portfolio can meaningfully improve outcomes and enhance returns. Of course, there are many different types of alternative assets, each with their own distinct characteristics. For investors, understanding how to leverage these alternative strategies can make the difference between falling short of your long-term goals and surpassing them. For today's episode, I'm excited to be joined by my colleague Pulkit Sharma, Head of Alternative Investment Strategy and Solutions here at JP Morgan Asset Management, to discuss the benefits of allocating to alternatives and the opportunities that he's seeing across alternative asset classes. And if you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can now watch along on YouTube by tuning into our JP Morgan Asset Management channel, linked to the show notes. Now let's get started. Pulkit, welcome to Insights Now.
Thank you, David.
So before I begin, I recognize that a lot of our listeners may have more experience with traditional asset classes, like stocks and bonds. So just to make sure we're on the same page here, how would you define alternative assets?
The answer to that question is in the question itself, which is these are the non-traditional asset classes. So we could use an exclusion-based definition of anything which is non-stocks, bonds, and cash. Mm-hmm. The big major private segments there would be private equity, private credit, private real assets, real estate and infrastructure, and also categories where you could short like hedge funds or differentiated listed alternative exposure. So all of that together forms the alternatives universe.
That's a lot of alternatives. So given that we've had very good returns over the years from just 60-40 stock bond portfolios, why should investors be considering adding alternatives to a portfolio?
I think it's going to be well summarized by a lot of the work we do in the capital market assumption process every year. And what's very evident to us is there are three reasons, and in fact, there are four. They can be well summarized by the letters A, I, and D. So alternatives coming to the aid of traditional portfolios. A for alpha generation or return premiums, which investors can seek. I for actually income and inflation, so two I's. And then diversification. And if I sort of unpack the these four a little bit more, the alpha or the return premium is quite different in various different sets, categories of alternatives. So private equity and the capital market assumptions we forecast at the median manager, net of fees, long 10 to 15 year horizon level has a 200 basis points premium over public equities, driven primarily by operational improvements. Real assets can provide a 200 basis points premium over investment grade fixed income, but the returns themselves could be equal to public equities because the cash flows are not fixed, they can grow. Hedge funds can be 200 basis points over cash because they have the ability to long and short. Again, all these stats are at the median manager level. So that's the premium construct. Then there's the income construct. So real assets have contractual cash flows from strong counterparties, so they are a producer of income. The other element is inflation resilience, and this is the time for that. We have been in a period of elevated inflation, and real asset categories in particular did a great job against inflation because they have muted supply response, you have contractual inflation increases, and you have replacement cost increases. All of that are embedded in these fundamental asset classes. And finally, diversification. So what's a perfect example of that would be 2022 when stock and bonds performance went down together. One of the the genesis of that was, of course, this environment of higher inflation. So diversification tools are important. Mm-hmm. Hedge funds are a diversification tool because they have the ability to do short. And also categories like infrastructure, which you continue to use even in recessionary mm-hmm. times or bad times, they are diversifiers. So the A, double I, and D are the reasons we think there will be increasing allocations to alternatives in the future.
All right. I'm particularly interested in actually both of the eyes here. I mean, I think one of the really interesting things we saw in the last few years is how alternatives can actually protect you against inflation. You know, you think about a diversified portfolio, stocks and bonds, but they both went down in 2022 because of higher inflation. So alternatives clearly have operated as good protection against that. But let me hone in on a different thing, which is this income issue. Because, yes, alternatives produce income, but it used to be a very low bar because on fixed income, you're getting virtually nothing. But now that we've got higher interest rates, you think the case for alternatives for income is still compelling?
I think it's equally compelling and equally strong. So while we have this short-term construct of elevated base rates and cash rates are up, in the next 10 to 15-year view, in the capital market assumptions, we forecast the U.S. cash number to be close to a 3, then a 5. So cash actually itself is not risk-free. It has the reinvestment risk embedded in it. And so while categories are like the income-producing categories of high-quality real assets, they themselves may produce income akin to fixed income. They also have the ability to grow those cash flows. Mm-hmm. And that growth could come from cash flow growth itself, some moderate amounts of leverage, and also exiting these high-quality assets in a much more normalized bond yield environment. All of those are factors which make their role more above just an income construct. And then the two other elements we talked about earlier are the diversification and inflation resilience, which is also embedded in them. So while the one of the I's is not as the same as what it used to be, the other I of inflation resilience, the D of diversification, and the return premium story is very strong.
People say they want fixed income, but actually they want growing income, and alternatives can give you that growing income. You know, when you think about portfolios, how would you, put these very different assets into a portfolio? How do you think about it in terms of portfolio construction?
I think portfolio construction, there are a couple thoughts here. One is the process itself, and then the second is thinking of capturing dispersion in these segments as well. So alternatives, as you said, are a very broad swath of asset mm-hmm. classes. First principle there is capturing dispersion. And there are two kinds of dispersions which exist in alternative asset classes. One is manager dispersion, which mm-hmm. is quite well understood. And we think there are two categories of alternatives where manager dispersion is very high. One is categories which have a majority of the returns coming from capital appreciation, mm-hmm. private equity, or which are absolute return where managers define the asset class in different formats like hedge funds. There, the manager dispersion is quite massive, so that's an important tool to have. There is another set of categories which are high-quality income-producing categories. Core Plus is what we call them, where 70-plus percent of the total return, for example, comes from predictable cash flows. Mm-hmm. There, the manager dispersion is actually quite low. So in private equity and hedge funds, it's around 5 to 10 times wider. So now that leads to implementation insight for clients, which is they should do more with fewer managers in the core plus space, and they should do less with many managers in the private equity and hedge fund space. So that's an implementation insight.
Yeah, so essentially you would say that getting the right manager is even more important in private markets than in public markets.
Definitely in the two areas which I highlighted, which is the capital appreciation components or absolute return components. In the other areas, it's important in every asset class, whether it's stocks, bonds, or core plus, but the level and the magnitude of dispersion is manifold in those two areas in particular.
All right, well, thanks. And I think that sort of gives us a good general understanding of what we're talking about in the overall space here. But let's talk about one specific thing, which is real estate. I mean, a lot's been going on in private real estate in the last few years. How do you think about that in terms of alternatives right now?
I think the real estate asset class is, first of all, quite wide and quite diverse. And there are many segments, there are many styles, and there are many sectors. The last 3 years for real estate have been quite interesting. So if you take the roll tape backwards, in 2021 was the year of this enormous stimulus, which mm-hmm. boosted the performance of public markets, public REITs. They had a mm-hmm. phenomenal year. what that stimulus did was increase inflation. So private real estate also did really well in 21-22 time horizon. And then the central banks applied the brakes, and that was a great time for, if you were a lender in lending in the real estate space, but not so good for the public and private equity segments of real estate. All of that leads to today, and which is where we are today. Looking forward, we are, our base case view is we are in an environment where inflation remains quite sticky. It's coming down. The resting heart rates of rates is plateauing, and we are in a lower sort of economic growth environment. So in this kind of environment, we see that real estate, actually, a lot of the pain is kind of behind us, and we may be at or near the bottom. When I say that, I'm looking at a few factors at play. The first one is that the fundamentals are pretty solid. There hasn't been a lot of supply in general, a lot of new construction. Secondly, with the rates plateauing, we see that the risk premium for higher quality end of real estate is set to compress, which will give it a tailwind in the future. And in general, also some of the more impacted sectors, like office, for example, is we are seeing some green shoots in terms of positive net absorption, especially in the higher, newer, higher quality office space, which I think is kind of undersupplied. So connecting all of these dots together, we believe that we are at sort of near or close to the bottom. And there is, at least in the equity side, which has been the more impacted segment, we see some green shoots and tailwinds in the future.
All right. Well, that sounds hopeful. More broadly than across alternatives, what are some of your other high conviction ideas now?
Okay, in the broad swath of alternatives, maybe I'll take a step back and talk about some of the process we use to come up with these convictions in the first place. And the process really involves around this moniker of more science and less art. So we are hard at work every day figuring out how the private markets connect to various macroeconomic influences on the top-down side and also from a bottom-up supply-demand dynamic side. Again, private markets are in general more inefficient versus the public markets, so it has a richer level of insight which could be produced. So all of that leads to how, the recent process we concluded, what are the higher conviction areas. What we see are two areas which we think are very high conviction, which is areas which have pricing power. And areas which are can take advantage of some of the dislocation which is at play in the private market. So examples of the first area would be categories such as infrastructure or transportation, where you have more demand than supply. You have just a fundamental need to move people, water, data, energy. And so these asset classes are all set, which have inflation increases and can do well in a low growth regime. Are higher conviction segments in the real asset space at the moment. And in the dislocated areas, there are a couple areas to highlight. One would be the higher quality end of the credit space. So think of asset-backed loans or loans to fully occupied buildings in the commercial real estate space where banks have retrenched, the equity market pricing has already corrected. And if you are a provider of capital at a time when loans are refinancing, you can take advantage of higher base rates and higher spreads. So it makes it a high conviction segment. And the other area we like is the secondary area and the private equity and private credit space. There, the story revolves around liquidity and providing liquidity in a segment which is sort of at or near some level of discount. So you could mitigate the J-curve and be a provider of liquidity when the exits have been quite muted. So those areas we like.
I really like the, you know, as you were talking about, you know, More science, less art. I mean, this is really an area, alternatives are an area where actually working the numbers with a lot of expertise really can pay off because markets just aren't as efficient as public markets.
Absolutely. And it's not only just efficient, there is also a lot of dispersion, as we talked about, between these various segments. So the idea of, you know, portfolio construction 101, not only you have to build a strong portfolio by sizing strong positions, taking into account risk-return correlations and distributions of these asset classes, but tilting them in the right direction and aligning with the macroeconomic narrative can be a tremendous source of value in these areas.
And so when you're doing that tilting, obviously you're tilting towards some things. You're also going to be tilting away from other things. So what don't you like right now in the alternative space?
Thematically, what the areas we don't like right now are really revolves around categories of alternatives which have had this beta snapback in the traditional asset classes, and they have associations with that, or areas which are impacted by the sort of a higher resting heart rate of interest rates. And so, you know, the first segment would be think of publicly held real estate or infrastructure. We have seen a lot of quite a bit of snapback in these areas, and some sectors may have more capex requirements and may not have high growth, so we're cautious on those areas. The high interest rate impact areas could be the weaker areas of the private credit space, where they will be impacted because this, it's harder and harder to service that debt. So again, we like the quality areas. The other area we are cautious about, moderately cautious about, is the area which has been impacted by the housing market. So a lot of mortgage rates increases has sort of killed new construction in the in the new home space, which is, there's obviously a secular undersupply of homes, but at least in the near term, one of the biggest users of that is forestry. So while we think that's a phenomenal asset class for inflation linkage and also good for the carbon offset, there may be a little bit of a near-term headwind in that space to be to watch for.
That's, yeah, I think it's always important to talk about what doesn't look good as well as what does look good. Speaking of, I guess, themes, there has been a obviously a lot of focus in the last year on artificial intelligence. I guess that's a sort of major theme of our of the present time. But what other themes are you looking at here in terms of themes that we can capture alpha, I guess, in the alternative space?
Yeah, in the recently finished outlook, we came up with we're sort of hungry for three D themes, and you know, in like American pop culture, the reality show, the 3D connotation is associated with diner drive-ins and dives.
Okay,
we are not hungry for that. We are hungry for another set of 3Ds, which is the need for a diversification, the disruption theme, and the dislocation theme. Mm-hmm. We've talked a little bit about the diversification story and you know how infrastructure hedge funds diversify client portfolios. We've talked a little bit about the dislocation story in the secondary space as well as in the real estate space. Mm-hmm. Well, the disruption story is very strong as well, and private capital has a role to play in capturing some of that disruption. And a couple areas we are observing which are disruptive today are the areas around generative AI, natural language processing, and how if the companies are private, if you're a provider of growth equity capital, you can capture that secular theme. In addition to also the life sciences and healthcare theme and the rapid, not only the drug development around things like obesity drugs, but also the whole technology ecosystem around this space can has a secular strong theme. So that's a good way also to play the long-term themes where you align your capital with the opportunity, which is not going to be just a one-year opportunity, but it's going to stay for the long term.
And I guess particularly, I sort of think about this in the U.S. economy, but the U.S. economy is always full of new ideas and new ideas to take, you know, to replace the old. So that dynamism and that, you know, disruption and dislocation is really important for economic growth, but it's also where you can get a lot of great returns in the long run.
Yes.
So last question I had, and thank you so much for your time here, but I think alternatives have often been thought of as exclusively for institutions or very rich investors. But we're seeing more of an effort to, I guess, allow or help individual investors, more moderate investors, invest in alternatives. Is this something you think is going to continue?
I think that's a theme which we see every day play out, especially in the last 3 to 5 years. And a few points I'll make on that space is, firstly, the regulators are carefully looking at that space, and they're actually encouraging the private wealth market to have access to alternatives, which typically only institutions have had for the last 30, 40, 50 years. And they're really focused on things like diversified access and ensuring that the liquidity is done properly. If I take a step back and look at the institutional journey, which has sort of taken 30, 40 years, and we see some institutions have as much as 50% allocation to alternatives, that was not a straight line journey. That journey took, there was an evolution. And the journey for the private wealth space may not be similar to the way institutions have built out their portfolios. And like an analogy I could draw is that you're, on one hand, you have a developed market which had which had the access to 5G, but the access to 5G took a long time. You had the phone line, and then you had rapid increases in infrastructure, which led you to the 5G situation today. Whereas in a rapidly developing emerging market, you can straight away go to the 5G. So, you know, that's really what the advantage the private wealth space has versus the institution, which has taken a longer journey. And what the private wealth space has typically is a balanced portfolio of stocks and bonds, which is high quality, and the two stocks and bonds diversify each other. So that may be the 5G approach for the private wealth space, which is to build well-balanced, diversified portfolios. And I'll sort of go back to the principles of portfolio construction we advise institutions on, which is, first, more is better for getting the alpha, inflation, diversification outcomes when it comes to alternatives. The second principle is broader is better. And why is broader better? Is because it gives you a smoother ride, and you have intra-category diversification. And then active is better for selecting the right approach, having asymmetric returns. But also in the wealth space, what would be important would be proper liquidity management and also risk management on an ongoing basis. So I think that's the journey which the private wealth space is undertaking right now.
What you're really saying is that the average investor is going to be able to take advantage of all this experience that's been built up as institutions have dealt with the opportunities, but also the difficulties and alternatives over the years. All that embedded knowledge can now be, you know, we can sort of make use of it more quickly in the retail space.
And that is the key word, is knowledge. And, you know, things like these podcasts, the work we do in the capital market assumptions, the guide to alternatives, the guide to markets, have developing a language where alternatives can fit the broader portfolios in apples to apple risk and return framework is absolutely key and essential.
And that's
for
really
this
what
evolution.
And that's really what the guide to alternatives, but also this season's all about. It's, you know, we're calling it alternative realities, but what we really want to do is simplify the complexity of alternatives, because everybody should think about what's their alternative.
Absolutely.
So listen, thank you, Pulkit, so much for joining us here on Insights Now.
Thank you, David. My pleasure.
On our second episode of Season 9, I'll be joined by Stephen Catherwood, co-head of our Global Private Equity Group, to discuss opportunities across both private equity and venture capital. To all our viewers and listeners, thank you for tuning in today, and speak with you soon.
This content is intended for information only, based on assumptions and current market conditions, and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.